Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by Los Bagels, one of our local businesses who have totally been holding it down during the pandemic. Right now, they're open 7 days a week in both Arcata and Eureka. They've got fresh baked bagels, pastries, delicious coffee and espresso drinks. They offer outdoor seating at both locations now so you can stay distant and safe while still eating someplace other than your own house. Amazing. Check out Los Bagels, open 7 to 2 daily at 1061 I Street in Arcata and 403 2nd Street in Old Town Eureka.
Happy Humboldt, everyone, is a thing we say to kick this off. This is Humboldt Holding Up. It is a podcast that the Loco does because we were really bored. We were not having as much fun as we previously had. And so we decided to take it out on all of the rest of you by recording our Zoom calls. And here we are. My name is Andrew Goff.
And I'm Stephanie McGarry. And now we're just having so much fun.
So much fun.
So much fun, because now we do this. Now we do this podcast. It's real
professional.
Cool. Yes, highly professional. Speaking of professional, we've actually been getting slightly more professional as we move along, and so just want to mention. So, well, we're on iTunes now.
That's
Does that make us
something.
Professional? I don't know.
Yeah. Steve Jobs made that.
Apparently anybody can do that, but we just want to mention that you can now subscribe to Humboldt Holding Up on iTunes if that is something that interests you. Also, you know, we're always looking for hot new sponsors of our humble little podcast.
Only so hot sponsors.
If you're interested in advertising with Humboldt Holding Up, all you need to do is shoot an email to advertise@lostcoastoutpost.com.
And speaking of life not being fun anymore, Steph, remember going to concerts, to shows, to letting live music seep into your ears?
Concerts?
Yeah, concerts.
Concerts.
Yeah. Concerts. It's a thing we used to do. And
yeah, okay.
Humboldt.
Yeah.
As I have posited in the past, we overachieved in the live music world. We got better shows, better touring musicians and bands than really an area our size should get. And part of that has to do with the hard work of people like Laurel Weston, who was the head booker at Humbrews. Humbrews, of course, like all other venues, has had to stop. They stopped doing live music because there's a global pandemic going on. So we're going to ask Laurel what her life has been like, a little bit about Humbrews, whether they will come back or not, and just when, if ever, will Humboldt get to have live music experiences again? So let's get her in here. Laurel.
Hi, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I feel quite honored.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, I mean,
we are
honored to have you. So today we are joined by Laurel Weston, who has been booking shows, bands, live music, and various other things at Humbrews in Arcata for more than a decade now, right? How long have you been doing that?
About 10, 11 years.
Okay.
And before that, though, I also worked in the industry. I was an independent promoter for a while, and I also was a booking agent where I represented bands and booked their tours for them and had a personal roster.
Operating out of Humboldt?
The actual agency was in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And I just had my roster, and I mostly worked from home. It was regional booking, so I booked West Coast tours, and I was networked with a lot of, you know, some of the sister clubs that these acts would be playing in already. So it was an easy transition for me.
And so, how is it that you ultimately arrived in Humboldt?
I came here for grad school. While ago. Yeah. And just didn't leave. I love it here. But I just kind of fell into music, just being from San Francisco and being involved in that world. And it wasn't what I studied in grad school.
What did you study in grad school?
Literature and composition theory.
rock and roll really is good way press more release. Fun. Yeah. I think for if you're a local person who loves live music and specifically bands, I mean, Humbrews has been a much appreciated aspect of the Humboldt experience. You know, obviously. Also, Soul Night and its spin-offs have been an institution for years. But as we know, when COVID-19 hit, live music venues were identified as an obvious way that the virus could spread. So knowing all the work that you put into Humbrews over the years, I imagine this has been pretty crushing. What has all this meant for you personally?
That's a really loaded question. Just because I it was kind of my baby. It was built from the ground up, and I played a large part in that, as well as our lead house engineers, in terms of sound and protocol and how we were going to run things. And my experience with production, I was able to translate some of that, but there, every room has new kinks to work out. And so, and it was hard putting us on the map at first, like a brand new venue. I had to network with the contacts that I have and kind of get the word out to agents. Hey, I'm doing this now, when you're routing your tours, please reach out and let us know what dates you might be interested in, and we can go from there. And it happened faster than you'd expect. Yeah. So, I think my history kind of helped with that, but also my heart, I loved the room. It was just, it's just a perfect space. And I was originally done with the music industry. It's kind of, it's a tough industry to work in. It can be kind of rather dirty. And being a woman, it's especially can be difficult. And I was just like, I'm gonna just like, get a desk job and get out of this. And I couldn't. And it was like when Humbrews happened and I talked to Andy, it was just, I looked around and I was like, I gotta do this, So.
Yeah. I think speaking, when I talk to local musicians, obviously there are bigger venues in the county, but there's something about that room, the sound system being something that I think a lot of people cite that just makes it a place you want to play.
There was a lot of work that went into that, and we're constantly upgrading that gear. And but it was very well thought out in the very beginning about how the mains were flown, what kind of gear suits that kind of space. All the walls are sound insulated, so it was acoustically correct, and it's all buffered in the right places, intentionally buffered. So there's no bleeding and, cross whatever. Yeah. And you don't even know it's there because we kind of, cleverly concealed it.
So what is the thing? Yeah, I haven't. What is the piece of trivia that I feel like I remember, like the soundboard used to belong to somebody or what?
It's no longer, we went digital, but it was an old analog console and a very desirable one. Not many were made. And it used to be the sound console that was used on the Friends show, the sitcom.
That is so funny. That's definitely not what I was expecting.
That's not what I thought I was asking you.
I do not remember ever hearing that piece of trivia.
It was a special piece of equipment. It had some energy to it and some history to it. And because there were so few, old school sound engineers that were guest engineers that would come through with the bands would be like, oh my gosh, that's a That's a gamble.
Well, you know, what was it? What is the console?
It was a Crest gamble.
Okay. You said yeah. Gamble.
Yeah,
I know. It's not a risk gamble.
Yeah.
You're going to get these.
No, it's a sure thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and then some of the more green guest ones would be like, oh, it's all analog. You know, they're used to like using presets and, you know, just plugging in their, you know, USB and having, and then just messing with it from there. But
still the soundboard from Friends, I'd say that's a
first. Funny. I definitely thought it was going to be, you know, like from, it used to be on tour with Black Sabbath or something. Friends. That's
not what I was expecting. I don't remember what it was though. And there's other gambles like it that have history like that, but there's like under 100 of them made or something. Okay. I know I'm going to get proven wrong on that, but it's like not a lot of them.
Definitely going to be looking this up after, but you know, that's really rock. There's nothing more rock and roll than Friends. I mean, that's like,
right.
So it's been, you know, since March. What has your life looked like without having to pilot this ship of rock and roll that you had?
So in March when it all happened, I think that people didn't really know how extreme and serious this was going to be. And so originally, you know, like we weren't even in lockdown yet. SIP hadn't even happened. But I had some touring acts canceling on me and being like, you know, just we're doing the responsible thing and it's probably not a good idea if we do this whole tour. And so we're canceling and we'll reschedule with you. And I had a packed calendar, and this was before the governor or any, you know, the county had made any sort of announcements like, hey, shelter in place, do this and that. And I canceled all our events, and I got a lot of backlash for that because it was, a lot of people thought it was premature or overreacting or, you know, nervous Nelly sort of thing from the audience, you know, and ticket holders to my own staff, you know. They're like, really, you know, these were going to be good shows and I wanted to work this weekend. But I knew I felt like I was doing the right thing.
Well, so, I think we've proven that, you know, not that you want to gloat about it, but
I don't have any regret with that. I feel like some of us just kind of made the call earlier than we were told to. You look at the city of San Francisco, which is where I'm from, you know, they shut down before the rest of the state, and they are now kind of models of behavior and how to approach this, and the earlier you check it, the better the results. I'm unemployed and that's no fun. And you know, this was a 20 plus year career for me, so you know, it's a little frightening and daunting to try and re-identify myself and see myself in something completely different, but I know I kind of have to.
I was going to say, obviously venues, you know, among the first things to go and the last things to come back in this pandemic. But I mean, you're talking as though, I mean, do you have any sort of idea about what the future holds specifically for Humbrews? I mean, have you had discussions about, you know, if we get to this point, like, okay, then we can start booking shows again, or?
You know, truthfully, after I got laid off, you know, Andy and I will still check in with each other and just be like, hey, how you hanging in there? You know,
Andy is the owner of Humbrews.
And I know that he was busy, you know, transitioning to new protocols for the restaurant, and that's been pretty consuming. But the venue's sitting empty. So, and I don't know, I know he did tell me that he was able to get some loans. I don't know what they were for, or if it was, or if he was able to get rent forgiveness for the venue. That rent is downtown rent, and it's a big space.
Yeah.
So, and truthfully, the music industry was really changing already, and it's a, you know, it's a slim margin of profit as it is, and then also there was a trend in the music industry as a whole, and you're going to see that with any capitalistic thing, where some of the larger entities start absorbing the little guys, especially when they start succeeding. And so, you know, all the boutique, you know, booking agencies were being absorbed by this one major, you know, conglomerate, you know, corporation. And you know,
who is that?
Okay, I have a very good relationship with them.
Okay, yeah.
Just look.
No, you haven't said anything bad about them. Just that they're big and they're
Paradigm.
Sucking up everything.
Paradigm. Okay, I didn't talent know. Agency. And then all the production companies and venues were getting bought up by Live Nation.
Right.
So, and even medium, small, or size venues like us. Yeah. So, you know, and then ticketing agencies were all, you know, kind of doing the same thing. You know, everything's kind of Ticketmaster, you know, and Eventbrite's a big one too.
Yeah.
So, you were already seeing that happening, and it was threatening because, you know, we're a tertiary market. We're on the coast, not exactly on the way. We were a desirable stop for, you know, our production quality, the room, relationships that were developed and loyalty that were developed. And it was kind of a fun stop between, you know, the Bay Area and say Portland. So, but with Live Nation in the picture, buying up venues, it's one phone call. You can get a whole package deal for an entire, you know, 12-date tour with one phone call. And you're just going Live Nation venue to Live Nation venue all the way up the West Coast. And it's up the five because it's going to be a lot easier that way. And they're going to buy up a venue in Sacramento before they're like, Humboldt, let's see.
Right. Yeah, it's too bad because I've always thought, you know, and have said this, that Humboldt has overachieved as for the, you know, the amount of good touring, you know, out of the area touring acts that we've been able to draw because we are this stop between Portland and San Francisco. And so it's sad to have something like this and everything you're citing dry that up.
Yeah. And I mean, we were already moving towards that trend. The future was like kind of looking a little bit harder to predict. And I think we were so, you know, such a niche that we were able to sustain. But, you know, with this and no revenue coming through, it's really hard to say how not just Humbrews will survive, but all, you know, small independent venues will survive. Mm. I see them closing left to right. There's lots of sadness in the industry right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the agencies are closing down. Oh my God, I didn't mean to do this.
It's
okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm starting to feel that way too, because it's like, when you're saying it, it's like, gosh, I guess thinking about it, I kind of also could have seen this coming, but it's just, I don't feel like I've really heard somebody just kind of say it like this, you know, laid out.
Yeah, this is a grim picture you're painting.
I know. And you were like, it's an uplifting podcast, you know, and I'm like,
well,
I'm going to be the anomaly.
I think that Humboldt, one of the things we pride ourselves, you know, like, I'll say it like this. Humboldt prides itself a lot on not being Reading. And I think that, you know, we have, I don't know, is that a bad thing to say? I don't know. But like, we have this little cultural hub, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And we, as I say, we overachieve culturally, I think. That's one of the benefits to living here and, you know, and access to live music, whether that be, you know, the great pool of local musicians we have, or the bands that we're somehow able to seduce here with, you know, rooms like Humbrews and probably Weed, but is something that, you know, that makes living.
That was less of a factor than you think. Was less of a factor than you think, you know, okay. But yeah.
Okay. But yeah, it's some of the things that makes living here just that great a gem of a life.
It really does. And I think that there's always been a history of art even before the music scene got booming in Humboldt. And, you know, I don't want to be doom and gloom. I'm not saying music's going to disappear. You know, the entities that will survive are the PACs, you know, and universities and things like that. PACs are performing artists, you know, centers, and they're usually grant funded and, you know, city funded, and they play a very important role in the art industry, and things like the Playhouse. So they'll still be around, and they will find ways to reinvent themselves in terms of for profit clubs. I have no idea what's going to happen. And it looks, you know, the only way to really pull it off, even if they do pass rules, you know, and guidelines and how you should do this, you know, for one, we're going to be cutting capacity quite a bit for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, the ticket price has to go up in order to compensate the musician. That's passing that on, you know, that expense onto the consumer. Mm. And our whole production costs go up, because in order to execute and enforce these rules and keep the environment safe, we will definitely need extra staff and extra protocol. And all our profits, and a lot of people don't realize this, or all the revenue and that even covers some of our production expenses are from the bar. And when you have, you want people to drink in a club, but in these situations where, you know, safety is going to be huge, people get loose when they're drinking. Yeah. And that's another thing to consider. It's just like keeping people in these little pockets, you know, you can divide it up, but enforcing it's a whole nother ball game.
Yeah.
And yeah, and people are going to want to dance, and I have a hard time picturing it and seeing it even being cost effective.
Right.
It seems like you're just throwing money at a wall and not recouping any of it. Mm. And it's a for-profit industry. There's no profit involved in that scenario, though as much as I want it to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, people do it for the love, though, and I don't know.
Right, but our overheads needs to be paid for in order to provide the love. So
when you talk about the place, you know, some of these other places sort of maybe like the Playhouse or something, you know, surviving by kind of reinventing themselves. And, you know, we've seen a lot of that with COVID too, people really, places, businesses really adapting. And I mean, has there been talk about just other ways a venue can possibly survive other than, you know, doing shows in the conventional way? Like, you know, when I've worked at music venues in the past, it seemed like a lot of the time the best money making events were like private events, like renting out the space, stuff like that. I mean, is that the type of thing that you guys think about?
That was never my department, so I'm sure that there's some way that the room can be adapted to that. And I know that we did hold banquets and stuff in addition to a very full calendar of you know, live entertainment. And I see it more on the promoter end, the independent promoter end, than the actual club entity end, where people have gotten really creative and lots of new platforms have propped up and appeared out of the blue that really lend itself to more online entertainment. And that's exciting. Drive up, shows and things like that. But at the same time, winter is coming.
Yes.
And, that, how does that work? Outdoor is not really an option. And it's never been an option for the clubs, because then you have an empty room with an unused sound system that is, permanent, and you can't go and fly it outside, and it's not suited for outside. It's suited for this space. And
That suddenly made me sad too, thinking about just these sound systems being unused. They live to be used. They need to be used.
Yeah, and we have all Meyer sound. I love our sound system. It sounds like God in there.
I hope somebody just goes in there and just plays, some.
Oh, music. I'm sure someone does.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody.
Did you just say it sounds like God in there?
Yes, I did.
But no, I love that. I love that as a description.
There's a special singing of it where with the right, mix, it can just sing. And it's like, choir of angels. it's beautiful. And I noticed my ears got kind of trained to that. So going to other venues can be hard for me, because I'll be like, ooh,
definitely.
But yeah. Laura Weston, audio snob.
I used to be an audio engineer myself, I definitely feel the same way.
Right.
And it kind of stinks, actually, because you become that person who can't just you try to turn it off when you go to shows. You don't want to be that person who's just like, ugh, this sound is
little tinny.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And your date is like, you are annoying the crap out of me. Can you
right. And for my husband is one of our sound engineers played a big role designing the system. And he's worse with that when it comes to sound. And I walk in and I'm like, I see all the production inefficiencies, and I'm like, they should really do this with their door, the lines backing up. And and I want to just fix everything. And I want to talk to your staff and see, how are you guys doing this? And because I see a big safety, you need security over there,
you are disinvited from all high school plays.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, it sounds like Humbrews has been really erring on the side of being responsible when it comes to this stuff, we were talking about, Andrew and I were talking about before this, how with the guidelines sort of changing somewhat frequently, it seems like the rules for venues and for event spaces are really kind of muddy. I'm not even sure I know what the clear protocol is right now for music. Is it allowed? I don't know. Some people seem to think so. Yeah. There's clearly some places that are doing it, locally. And
I see Laurel biting her tongue there.
Yeah. So I mean, I just.
Oh, what? You're the.
Yeah. What is your take on that? I mean, how much of the responsibility do you feel like falls on the proprietors of a venue? To promote this safety during all of this.
Right. All of it, and. I know that everybody kind of has a different, safety, their gauge for what's safe and what's not safe is going to be different from one individual to the next. But this is a hard question, because I don't want to, there's a lot of controversy. Especially locally in the community right now. And you know, I might be on the more extreme side of safety. Some people might just be approaching this a bit differently. But the whole idea is we don't have permission yet. And we don't have, set guidelines intact from our county officials, health officials, to the state. So no venues are opening unless they're opening in defiance. And I that worries me. It sets a standard that is not up to par. And when the rest of us are, you know, taking a hit, and you know, some of us are lost our 20 plus careers, and it's just sort of feels like a little bit of a slap in the face that, like, you know, it's working. That you know, everybody's united and working together to keep our numbers down. And it's been like, you know, it's kind of, you know, you feel for humanity. Like, look at us work together. Look at us make a difference. And that's the community, and makes me proud of our community. And then if another individual is just like, it is working, thus I'm gonna just do what I want, that just kind of undermines the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I absolutely hope that answered your question without, well, like, making it obvious.
Yeah.
Like,
I know. You're fine. Well, you're fine.
I think we know. Yeah.
Right. We appreciate that. Well, on to maybe something like a little bit more fun then, you know, in booking shows in Humboldt for as long as you have been, you know, other than like Grateful Dead cover bands, what kinds of shows tend to be the most
people will not see the eye roll she just gave.
Yes.
You're in big trouble now, Laura.
what kinds of shows are the most popular in Humboldt? And you kind of spoke to this already about, you know, seeing the music industry change, but specifically like this, the music itself, how have you kind of seen that change over the years too?
Oh, you know what, that's one of the special things about Humboldt, is it has such versatile taste. You know, there was a time where it was like all reggae all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like the tastes have expanded, and so it's always a surprise, but at the same time, you kind of know genre trends, and you know when a band has momentum and is starting to blow up. But, you know, bluegrass always did well in our room. Live music in general, rather than, like, we weren't the DJ place as much. We weren't the electronica stuff. Like, other venues had that niche, and that's cool. So, you know, we'd do some of that, but it was mostly the live music and lots of jam bands, lots of, you know, New Orleans, you know, soulful funk that just pulls you. And all over the map, there were, you know, every genre you can think of. And sometimes it would just be sometimes you were just like, wow, and looking around, and you have a practically sold out show or sold out show, and you're like, yeah, this is good. So, well, and sure, you weren't expecting it. So, yeah. Because Humboldt is not a pre-sale market so much. They buy their tickets in advance.
Yeah,
so you kind of walk in with a question mark. Okay, yes. Yeah. Agents love that too, because they're just like, ticket sales are awful. Like, what's going on?
Like it's fine. Don't worry.
And I'm like, this is normal. And I'm like, you watch, we'll be flooded at the door, which is super not fun for door and security staff, but it is the nature of Humboldt. Wait till the last minute, then you get shut out because we're sold out, and you're like, oh, I really want it. And I was like, we've been on sale for 2 months for this show. Like, yeah, I had a chance. But so there's just some quirky things that make Humboldt that also just, you know, that's what we love about Humboldt, is it's a quirky place.
Definitely.
So I think you mentioned to me that you average around 200 shows a year during your 10 years, that around that?
Yeah, probably more than that, you know. Okay. 3 to 5 shows a week.
Yeah. So when we scheduled this, I asked you to come up with a loose list of your top Humbrews live music experiences. And Laurel, it is time to turn in your homework.
I failed. Give me an F. There are so many unique moments. And to tell you the truth, some of the highlights of my time at Humbrews were not what you expect. Yeah. You know, they weren't necessarily musically. Like, a lot of times it was just when people would leave so happy and thank you. Some of them in tears, it was such a good show, you know, and then hearing that feedback. And there is no better feeling, you know, than a happy, fulfilled audience. And who just thought it was a perfect moment. It was a memory making moment. Those were the best. And I worked with bands, but I mostly worked with their tour managers. You know, yeah. A tour manager is somebody that travels with them, and they're kind of like how I get things done. All the, you know, pre-production stuff that before they even arrive is arranged between me and them. And, you know, I developed some wonderful relationships there and lifelong friendships with tour managers and my agents. My agents were everything. Yeah. So, and there were some core, very loyal agents that it became, you know, we had some very close, not intimate, that's a creepy word. Close,
no,
connected relationships. Yeah. Yeah.
So, right, well, I'll do that. I'll kick this off and get you in the mode of this. It was like, I saw Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears mm-hmm. at Humbrews, and I thought I was watching Hendrix. Like I this was one of the most, you know, I wasn't expecting to be blown away by a guitar player as much as I was him. Like, and at one point he jumped down into the audience and was doing like Homer Simpson spins on the floor playing blistering leads. And I was just like, oh, this would not have happened anywhere else.
He's amazing. And he's a super great guy on top of it all. And his songwriting is super soulful and unique. Yeah. My favorite song by him is the B word. I don't know if I can say that.
You can, you can say badass on this. Oh, that one.
Yeah, it's okay. We're not, this isn't the radio or something. Yeah. You can curse on our show. It's okay.
It's called Bitch, I Love You. And it's like this super bluesy tune. And I just am like.
I know that. Yes.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And that was, you must have seen him the first time he came through, because the second time he came through, he had a full leg cast. So he had broken his femur or something, like a major leg break. And so he's like, it's so hard for me to perform with, you know, when I'm hindered like this, because a lot of it is just feeling it, you know, and getting up and doing the things Andrew was talking about. Yeah.
He had two legs when I saw him. Yeah.
Well, he did then too, but he had to remain standing.
a different show, but I'm sure very good. And it's, in its own way, too.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what's so amazing about it.
What was the most starstruck you ever were by a performer who graced the Humbrews stage?
Probably Les Claypool. Just because I have such a history with Primus, it's not the first time I've interacted or met him, but it was the first time I was responsible for producing and paying him. You know. Yeah. And that was like, oh my God, like I've been a part of the Primus world since the early 90s, and you're playing my stage. Like, that was just mind-boggling to me.
Wow, yeah.
Fortunately, I knew a lot of the crew and was close with them. So it wasn't, you know, I had that at least to help feel comfortable. I didn't barf on his lap or anything. Although thought I might. And it was super fun. And he, you know, he recognized us. And so he stayed afterwards, and that's not normal for Les. So he hung out with us afterwards and, you know, chatted with me and and we shared some memories from back in the day.
I remember one of the other shows that stands out to me just because it was so unique, and I think you might have done a couple of these, but like Yoga Man Burning Band, and you guys, and you did and they did a thing, like, tell me if I'm remembering this right, where it's like they played a show, like, I want to say Saturday night, and then on Sunday they played a show at like noon and invited children to, you know, so that kids could bring their children to a live music venue and have a rip-roaring, you know, rocking experience that kids could just go wild to and convulse on the floor, and it was great.
Right, and the kids loved it. And that, you know, that we enjoyed it way, you know, more than the actual, you know, ticketed show.
Kids are so fun at shows. They're the best. They're the highlight. Yeah. They're like drunk people, except they're as inhibited as drunk people, but they're uninhibited, excuse me, but less annoying in some ways.
So. Right.
But they're not buying alcohol, which hurts Laurel's bottom line.
Unfortunately, yes, they're not helping with that overhead, but, you know.
But that's why we would do the show the night before.
Right.
You know, that was the ticketed profit show, and then the afternoon thing was just fun and really brought the community in, and that's when you see, like, you see your community come alive. It's when the kids are there and they're at, you know, they're going nuts because it's their party, you know? So it's so cute.
Now this is making me cry because I have a 1-year-old, and I just think about how it's amazing how kids are just so naturally drawn to music, and how it shows how it's just naturally, this is not a learned preference for us. Like, it is a part of our beings. And when a little baby hears music for the first time, they just start dancing. They start shaking. They're shaking their booties. They're like, just, they get into it. And it's like, you just know to do this. It's like, we're just driven. We're so.
That's why live music is so important, because, you know, although a lot of this online stuff is exciting and promising, and it, you know, it gives a platform of some sort, and it gives our talent somewhere to be heard. There is a lot to say about the exchange between, you know, the band or artists and their audience, and there is like a kind of I don't want to sound all hippy dippy, but there's an energetic give and take that is unexplainable.
Absolutely.
And the only way you can do it is in a live setting, and it doesn't translate to online. Not to mention online, you know, your talent isn't going anywhere. I want to make that clear. The musicians are still going to be there. They're still going to be making music. They're still going to be available to your ears. It's just that the industry, all the other things, there's not going to be people to book their tours. There's not going to be venues to play in, or as many venues to play in. So I'm sure hard for them to try and, you know, just reinvent with that when and if things start to reach some normalcy, you know? So what's live music going to look like? Can anybody even really picture it?
One of Humbrew's, I think, greatest successes and like a real gift to the community, and what's part of the legacy, I'm sure, was Soul Night. It seems like such an obvious thing to do, and yet at the time, no one was doing it. And
you know what's so funny? Do you know the story behind Soul Night?
We're on a podcast, Laurel. Andrew. Please tell me.
Oh, okay. I feel like you know, because I think we've had this conversation before. But
maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So do you remember back, it was like almost a decade ago, they were doing construction on H Street right at the end of the summer, like right when the students were coming back and there were tons of parents coming in town. Okay. And there was no even pedestrian traffic. So, and that's where Missing Link was located at the time. And they were used to the foot traffic, and that was always their big weekend in terms of just random people wandering into the store and seeing this cool, like, eclectic, you know, vinyl selection to choose from. And I'm close friends with the original owners, you know, Matt and Adam. Adam and I were like commiserating because Humbrews was taking a hit too. We were right around the corner from them, and he's like, let's go grab a beer, and just like, so we did. And I thought it was just having a beer, and I'm like, we just started chatting, and he's like, I'm worried about making our rent. And I was like, wow, you know, like we're suffering from this too. And that this was not so great timing, just because with, you know, whoa, the cat, the city, you know, the parents, and that weekend, the arrival of students is very celebratory, and people are all over the place. And that wasn't happening so much. So I was just like, what can we do? What can we do? And he's like, I don't know. I need to raise money for rent, and I need to do it fast. And I was like, let's do a rent party. And he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I don't know. But what if we do a rent party? And we kind of collaborated. And I'm just like, just bring some vinyl in. We'll get the word out. And, you know, spin some vinyl. And it's like, we called it Missing Link Missing Link's Got Soul or something like that. Yeah. And just to kind of like get the community rallying to fundraise and also enjoy some great vinyl in the process. Yeah. And, you know, help them pay rent. And it was such a success. It was a surprise. We were like, whoa. And they were okay after that. And I was like, do you want to try this again? And I thought maybe it was a fluke because, you know, people are going to rally around a hurting local loved business to help, you know, when they're in a time of crisis, but will they come out to something like this? Just cause. And, so we tried it again. It was bigger. Yeah. We tried it again and it was even bigger, and it just didn't cease. And that it became this total, you know, entity.
Yeah. Well, those guys, Matt and Adam, are such showmen.
They're wonderful. They're great guys.
Yeah. And it felt, you know, it felt almost church-like, just the gathering, just like good vibes. And,
right.
And dance and soul music just apparently is the best music that exists.
You know, what's great about Soul Night is that it was a completely different formula. Like, people come to Humbrews, there's a band on stage, they all face the stage, and all attention is directed to the stage. Soul Night was a party.
Yeah.
And so you came with a group of friends, you danced with your friends, you know, it was like, it was more of that, where it was a scene rather than everybody face the stage and, you know, look at the guitar player.
Right.
It had a unique feeling that way that I think the people sort of needed.
I shudder to think of, you know, how packed people were into that room considering our current situation. But like,
yeah,
that was,
we didn't go over capacity though. We were always rule followers.
I was not accusing you, Laurel. It's like, but that was the sweatiest room in Humboldt. I think that, like, I remember the very last, you know, Soul Night, or at least the last one under the Soul Night banner. I had this mix, I don't know how it got to me, like this mix of DJ Reds that was just like the only CD in my car for a number of years.
And
I just listened to it, and I don't even know, like,
I couldn't name you half the things that were on it because they were just kind of wordless soul tracks. And I listened to that, and I ended up at the last soul night, and DJ Red goes up to do his set, and he did the exact set that was on that CD, but mixed live, like, but with all the transitions were the exact same as the CD I had in my car.
Weird.
And it was just like, I was just like, what? It blew my mind, you know, like that. I was just watching him do this.
No, that's a cool memory. That's exactly, everybody brings something new away from Soul Night and what it means to them. You know, it's you completely a unique thing that way and special. Yeah. And people have tried to duplicate it. I mean, even in other markets, and they're like, why is yours so special? And I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's just the heart behind it. It came from a place of heart and community and kind of just stuck with that way.
Yeah. So, and you just found something that was missing that you didn't know was missing. It's, it kind of sounds like the way you say it, you know, the community wanted and needed that.
It was the missing link.
It was literally the missing link. What? Oh, wow. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so. Oh, were you going to say something? Sorry.
I was actually, because, you know, we were talking about the new platforms that are popping up. Yeah. I'm a part of the Club Triangles scene, and it was, you know, our residencies, like, you know, Soul Night and Soul Party and Club Triangle and the Rag Dolls and other residencies that were like monthlies, they just become a part of the family. And so not having that is, they have been really working hard to try and reinvent, and I've been doing what I can to help them. And what's cool is you see community collaboration, not just within the troupe, but like NCRT and Del Art have kind of stepped up to help with some of the, you know, technical concerns, and they're doing their first online, you know, production tonight.
Yeah, I've heard this is out of the NCRT space, right?
Yes, but each individual performer, you know, pre-recorded their act and sent it in, and then it was compiled together and edited together, and it's going to be this live event where we view it together, and they'll still be hosts, you know, Ginny Noggle and Tucker Noir, you know, our beloved drag king, will be hosting. So it's been fascinating to see the networking that's come out of that, and also inspiring. And I've learned a lot. So I mean, it's not all doom and gloom. You know, there's still ways of arts to find their outlets, and I think this is a perfect example. So I mean,
I know that
Club tune in tonight. I know Club airing this next week.
I know that Club Triangle has big ambitions for, you know, they have, you know, ever since COVID started, they've been experimenting in this space. You know, they do, how many events do they do on a Saturday now on Instagram? Like, it's like there's a whole day of scheduled events every Saturday that is Club Triangle.
Individuals get their own little shows.
Yeah, know? They're trying, man. They're out there trying new things, trying to engage with people in unique ways. You're involved in that. That's great.
As much as I can be, it's very different than, you know, my skills and expertise, but I'm happy to be included in some way, you know.
We are all having to find ways to adapt to the suck that is now. Well, is there, I mean, anything, we're getting near our time here, but is there anything else Humbrews related or anything else Laurel related that you'd like to get out there to the humble community before we go?
Well, I want to thank the Humbrews audience and local musicians, and also if any of my touring acts and agents listen to this, my heartfelt thanks. Just because it took an army to make it this special place that it became, and everybody needs to be recognized. It wasn't just people that made it go. It was. Everybody coming together was a place to gather. And, that's still a legacy that I will always, yeah, hold dear to my heart, and be proud of. So no,
there's
thank
a
you,
lot,
audience.
Yeah, a lot of ears and butts owe a debt of gratitude to you, Laurel. Thank you for all your efforts as to making this community vibrant in this decade plus.
And you said earlier about live music, the connection between the artists and the audience, just being so crucial to creating that experience. But, I think it's just important to me to acknowledge how important the role is of everybody behind the scenes, like you, and that when a show is just incredible, it's the people behind the scenes kind of don't exist. That's like your goal is, yes, to have it so that people don't think about you.
That's the way I like it.
You were back there toiling. I would say nobody pestered me harder to make sure that their shows were listed, whether it was when I was at the Journal. I appreciate the passion for what you do.
You gave
I
us the best write-ups. That's why, Andrew. You did. You really did. All right, we got the best coverage.
On merit.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is becoming a love fest. It's getting
totally. Well, we have to do it somewhere. We don't have.
And it's funny because when you contacted me, I was like, "Oh my god, I'm used to being behind the scenes. You don't even know I'm there."
Take your bow, Laurel.
Go. Yeah. And to be front and center, that people will be listening to me. I'm like, I'm on stage. Yeah.
Don't worry. Probably almost nobody will be listening.
So. Oh, awesome. Okay. That interesting, huh?
No, it's just, it's whatever. Yeah. Well, all right.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. That was a lot more fun than I had anticipated. So,
good.
And I'm looking for work.
Okay. Sure. Somebody please hire Laurel. I can vouch that she is good at being persistent, and she has a good taste in music and good ears.
All right.
Okay.
We'll take care of you too.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Or maybe not. So thank you again.
All right.
Someday. All right.
Bye.
Okay. Well, thank you so much to Laurel for joining us today. That was fun. I love how she said it was more fun than she was expecting it to be. So.
She was expecting this experience.
She wasn't expecting it to be fun at all. But I like that, keeping the expectations nice and low. And it was really wonderful, though, to talk about that a little bit. And I guess I hadn't thought about it in a little while, but I really miss the hell out of live music, too. It's like I stopped thinking about it, and now,
Let's, you and me, Steph, in the course of this week, come up with a plan to fix the world and start a band. Maybe we should just start a band.
Right. So
basically, that plays in fields.
We could just start a band that writes the song that saves the world. So basically, we need to Bill and Ted it, is what you're saying?
I didn't see that.
What? Okay, well, that's a whole other thing. We don't have time for that. So let's just get out of here. Yeah. Everybody, as always, we just want to remind you, what we probably don't even need to remind you anymore, wear a mask. And for crying out loud, vote, would you? Would you just vote and wear a mask? Do it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Bye, Steph.
Bye, Andrew.